Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, this show is brought to you by Markham Search, executive recruiting and staffing company with offices on the East Coast and the West Coast, servicing the accounting, professional services, and legal industries. Today on the show, we have with us Brian Weed. Brian is CEO of Avenica, a national career matchmaking firm specializing in placing recent college graduates into entry-level career track positions with Avenica clients. Brian is an experienced business leader with nearly 30 years of experience helping companies of all sizes improve processes, boost revenue, and drive business results. Prior to joining Avenica, Brian served as Chief Executive Officer of Tricoche University of Beauty Culture. During his time at Tricoche University, the fast-growing company was among the industry leaders in successfully placing its graduates with leading salons and spas. Prior to Tricoche University, Brian was a key architect of Avendra, a supply chain services company formed by Marriott and Hyatt, where he was the Chief Operating Officer. And in 2017, Avendra was acquired by Aramark for $1.35 billion. Brian has also been Vice President of Strategic Planning for Hyatt Hotels Corp. and Vice President and Partner of the Boston Consulting Group. Brian is an active philanthropist with a passion for improving outcomes for students from under-resourced urban neighborhoods. He graduated from Stanford University with a bachelor's degree in industrial engineering and later graduated with distinction from Northwestern University's Kellogg Graduate School of Management with a master's degree in business administration. Thank you so much for joining us today, Brian.
I'm happy to be here.
I might need a glass of water after that impressive bio. You've done quite a lot in your career.
Yeah, that sounded pretty good. I appreciate you going through the full list there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's important for the people tuning in today to have an understanding and a background of where people come from and what their level of expertise is. So speaking of that, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about how you decided to go this route and to get involved in career matchmaking?
Well, when I heard about the opportunity, which was through the private equity firm that was going to acquire the business, this was back in the early winter of 2016, it just really resonated with me. I have always thought that there's a dislocation between college and career, and you hear the horror stories of regardless of who you are, of the people who are struggling to really find what they want to do or maybe struggling to get traction in the job market, even in a market that's as strong as it is right now for graduates. So to the extent that I discovered that Avenica really helps those that are struggling in their search, and I bought into the process that we use, it was a no-brainer for me to join on. And so I've been here for about a year and a couple months and have just had a great time and more than anything, just happy that we can help so many college graduates.
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful resource that you offer. I remember, gosh, I was a train wreck when I graduated college. I actually told my parents this, Brian, I graduated with a degree, was very smart, graduated early, and I literally thought about actually working for the mail service, the post office, because they had good benefits, and I just didn't know where to even begin looking for a job. And I feel like they teach you so many scholastic things and historical facts and so forth when you're in college. But I found that there was definitely a gap in, oh my gosh, now what do I do with my life? Unless you're doing something very specific like mathematics, engineering, architecture, or very clear career path, it can be very confusing for recent grads to try and figure out where to apply their skills and how to land their first job.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think what we often find is people that might have been on a track, let's say they're a chemistry major and they're going to be a doctor, And then they decide towards the end of their undergrad period that, you know what, I really don't want to be a doctor anymore, but I'm going to get this chemistry degree. And so I don't know what to do with that. Or it could be the liberal arts graduate that has a history degree, and many of their peers in that degree program might be going off to graduate school or going off to teach or what have you. And they're just like, that's not really for me. So what can I do if I think about a professional career with a history degree or a chemistry degree? And that's where I think we really step in and provide assistance, because we really say, put the degree aside. It's obviously important, and you know, it's fantastic that you're able to achieve that, but it really doesn't define you from a professional perspective. So we take them through a two-part interview, and the first part really tries to uncover what are their transferable skills or competencies. And those are really independent of the degree, and they span from cognitive type skills all the way through to resilience and leadership and some of the softer skills that are super important in the job market. So I think through that discovery, we're able to pull out, along these 12 behavioral science-based factors, really what makes this person tick and what they're going to succeed at. And then the second part of the interview is to get them into a career exploration where they can tell us a little bit about their dreams, but then also we can layer in some of the observations from that first part to say, oh, well, given your profile, have you thought about this that they might never have thought about? So it's kind of fun to see their eyes open and to kind of think about careers that hadn't really been on their radar screen. And you were more the majority than the minority in that a lot of people are, in this market, I think a lot of people are leaving school not knowing exactly what they really want to be when they grow up, and we help them try to figure that out.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. Again, my plans at the time were anything ranging from, I think I had an offer in lending back in the day, Enterprise Rent-A-Car loves to hire recent college graduates.
Yep.
You know, the post office thing, it seemed like a good idea. And I'm sure for some people, it actually might be a wonderful job trajectory. I know my cousin, for example, getting a job with the government, he graduated from law school, and his goal was to get a job working for the state and doing something where he got great benefits. And I think those are the things that sometimes you don't think about. When you graduate, you just think to yourself, I want to get my first job. But for example, if somebody came to see you or I for their career goals, if somebody told me that they wanted a pension or really great long-term, benefits that they would be able to have, things that you might look into would be like firefighter, police officer, or any sort of government sort of job or teaching where you have those benefits that you don't get in normal corporate America, as opposed to somebody who just might want to make money very quickly and says, oh my gosh, well, I just want to make $100,000 right out the door, then that's going to be a very different sort of career trajectory and path that you're going to be looking at. And I think it's wonderful that you're spending this time to get to know what motivates people so you don't wind up with somebody in the wrong sort of a position, somebody working a government job where they really were motivated by money and they only can hit a certain tier every year, or vice versa, somebody who is motivated by stability and yet they have this opportunity to make a lot of money that they're not tapping into it. Does that kind of resonate?
Yeah, for sure. And I think in addition to the compensation expectations, I think millennials and Gen Z are much more broadly defined than maybe at least I was coming out of school back in 19 in the 80s. I kind of was very focused on a career and kind of taking the logical steps. These generation that have come out and are our core target are really interested in the mission of the organizations that they're working for. They're interested in work-life balance. They're interested in the environment, the work environment. And of course, they're interested in compensation, but I think they're sometimes willing to trade off compensation for some of those other factors. So in addition to the profile of what they're looking for in terms of short-term, long-term, you need to really think about what the culture and what the right fit is going to be. So you know, again, part of our process is to do that, because on the client side, we are talking to, you know, one of the 800 clients that we've had over the last 3 or 4 years, and trying to understand exactly all those factors. You know, the what does the work environment look like? Is it kind of a hipster type place? Is it a little bit more buttoned up? Is it, you know, is it casual? Is it, do they have great work-life balance policies, et cetera? So it kind of takes all those factors to really figure out what is a good match. And unfortunately, because we've been doing it for so long, we've got a track record of being able to find those matches. And the result of that is that for the client's sake and for the graduate's sake, the retention in those positions tends to be longer, 2x what the industry average is for our placements versus just the normal entry-level placement.
So tell me a little bit about that, because for some of our listeners out there who might have kids who are, you know, thinking of getting their first job, or maybe somebody out there just graduated themselves, what is kind of the general expectation in the marketplace of how long somebody will stay in their first job nowadays?
Well, the stats are that within 2 years, 70% of people have moved from that company. So
wow.
The retention rate, if you're a hiring manager, is that's kind of daunting to look at, because churn is the absolute enemy to hiring managers, as you know, because you just go through a lot of cost, both hard cost and soft cost, and lost productivity in finding and filling these roles. And so that that 30% retention rate, if you can move the needle a little bit, and ours is around 60%, which, you know, might sound not super high until you hear the norm. That makes a huge difference in terms of what the all-in cost is and the productivity of the workforce.
Yeah, I think that's a great point you raised. It's funny, I was recently working on a white paper for the legal industry about the same problems that people are facing, is that it's not sexy to people to be a legal secretary. Unfortunately, for the recent grads who are coming out, I was just talking to one of my peers about that today. And so the question that is on a lot of the legal hiring managers' minds is, how do you make it attractive and enticing to these grads? And the one thing that I've noticed is missing, at least in the legal realm, is kind of that upward mobility track that you would get in a corporation, where you have, like you said, with your career, like kind of a clear-cut path. You have room for upward mobility and new roles and new growth, which I think is very motivational for the upcoming recent grads and millennials and Gen Xers out there, where that's not always available. So how are your clients combating that if they're in a situation, say, like a law firm or in a corporate structure where there's not as much of that advancement? How do you counter that to increase the likelihood that somebody will stay past the two-year mark?
Well, some of that we actually do some coaching to the clients as well. And I think many of the managers that are running these departments came up through a system where, you know, the promotions came few and far between, and you had to kind of pay your dues for a couple, 3 years, and you might get promoted. And the new model tends to be shorter periods of time, more frequent feedback, more opportunities for advancement. So we counsel our clients to think about, you know, every 6 months, think about a potential advancement, even if it's modest. You know, it could be a title change, it could be a, you know, minor bump up in pay, but it shows that the positive reinforcement to the employees, and they tend to get more engaged if they're seeing that they're getting somewhere. Now, not everyone can do that, and sometimes that's hard. It's particularly in larger companies to kind of upset the apple cart in terms of their promotion track. The other thing is, you can, your law example, given how much pressure there's been on, you know, full-fledged lawyer billing rates, I'm guessing that the smart law firms out there, I know one or two of our clients fit this category, they're leveraging the assistants to start to do more and more production type work. Now, obviously, they can't finalize documents, but they can do a lot more. So if you bring someone in as a legal assistant, there should be some types of job work that is either part of their job or it could be project work that can keep people engaged. But you do need to give positive reinforcement as it's earned, but you need to give some kind of feedback on a regular basis and much shorter intervals than you did in the past.
Yeah, we've been noticing that across different industries as well, not just in the legal industry, but I think that a lot of employers are reticent and frustrated because they feel like, well, gosh, I worked my butt off and I never expected a pat on the back. Right. So why do these people need a pat on the back? And I think that we're getting into kind of this stubbornness battle where you have the people who are graduating who say, this is what I need. These are what my expectations are in order to be happy and to thrive. And then you have the people who have been doing it already for however many years who are reticent to change or to do anything differently. And so you're kind of coming to this head where people are bumping up against this and unwilling to move forward. And my experience has been the corporations, law firms, et cetera, who are unwilling to look at ways to do things differently or change or adapt to the requirements of these incoming graduates and what their expectations are not failing, but they're less effective at capitalizing on this talent that's in the market, has been my experience.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, it is with unemployment at near historic lows, there's a war for talent out there. And any particularly thriving, growing company will say that. And so the fact is you got to meet the employees where they are. The millennials are now the largest segment of workers out there and will keep growing, and Gen Z right behind them is becoming, you know, meaningful in terms of their number of workers, and the baby boomers are declining rapidly, and then Gen X kind of between the baby boomers and millennials is kind of steady. So all the growth is going to be in this younger generation or generations of people that have completely different orientation around work. And so you can say that you know, they don't work hard enough or whatever you might claim they are. But the fact is that is what that generation is. And so you need to adapt. And the best ones, to your point, are doing that. And the ones that aren't are going to lose out on the really good talent. And ultimately, in a service economy, that's not going to be a good long-term position for them.
So let's talk about benefits for a moment. As the example I gave, you know, one of the things it was instilled in me by my parents and their generation was benefits are important. You know, my father worked for the fire department, and I think that's why something government-related, like the post office or a job like that, that would give me long-term security, motivated me when I was first out of college because it seemed like a good idea to get benefits. My experience has been recently that some of the things, like, for example, 401k, long-term, short-term disability, benefits that used to have a value in the marketplace to perhaps baby boomers or Gen Xers have now gone by the wayside in terms of importance comparatively to a fun culture or happy hours on a Friday. What are your thoughts on that as far as what people are preferring in the marketplace?
Yeah, I agree. I think retirement, saving for retirement, I would say, has not gone away as something people are interested in, but I would say it's always hard to get particularly younger workers to think about retirement. And so even though they know they should, I think there's the, you know, there's two factors. One is it's so far out that I shouldn't have to think about it right now. And the second thing is that in the early part of your career, you want every bit of disposable money as possible to live on, to either pay for your housing or a little bit of fun or what have you. So it is hard, but I would say that that still is a component. And I've seen studies that say there's, you know, it's not top of the list, but it is not gone away. But I would say it's all in my mind the softer factors, and it's the things that you mentioned, which is a nice work environment where people do some, you know, celebrating and social things, maybe periodically once a week or happy hour, or whatever. But also just a some of the benefit could be, you know, having the right kind of desk environment, having the, you know, the desk where you kind of stand up as you work, and, you know, there's kind of all these expectations around what that work environment's going to be. And it's partly because the hot companies like the Googles and all the tech companies that are in the media so much, you know, really get kudos around their culture and their free lunches and their kind of casual environment. And so that kind of bleeds into the expectations of many recent graduates. So even companies that you think are kind of staid and corporate are now trying to reimagine the environments they have and the types of benefits, be it meals or happy hours or whatever, that that they provide. So you've got absolutely right.
So do you think that's necessary then, if you're out there and you're a company who wants to capture that talent and find the perfect person to come work in your environment, do you think that you need to have both? You need to have the traditional tried and true benefits and also have, as you put it, this reimagined new environment?
Yeah, I mean, as an employer, I think ultimately you need to make choices and you need to be, you need to pick where you're going to try to differentiate yourself. I would say that if you're trying to appeal to millennials and Gen Z, that I would counsel you to weight those factors more than things like, as we just talked about, 401k. You know, they're willing to trade off maybe even a little bit of upside in terms of bonuses and other things. There's also that a dynamic that we can talk about in a second, but I think that in the total compensation package, if you include the soft benefits that we just discussed, I think you probably need to skew towards those things that are that really matter to these new generations, or you're going to lose out to someone who may not, on a total compensation basis, have as you know, good a package or as in traditional terms, but who kind of hits those kind of sexier parts of the benefit program.
And I feel like, I know you said it's not always about the money. There was a interesting article that I got from LendEDU the other day, and it said, what would you do for a raise? 35% of Americans would give up their right to vote for a raise. So I'm wondering who was part of that survey, because it is a quandary. I feel like money has become more important to these up-and-coming generations, or at least the opportunity for regular increases in growth, where perhaps more traditional groups of people who are out there, Gen Xers, baby boomers, were willing to work 5 years in between raises or great promotions. And I found that statistic surprising. When I shared it on social media, people were blown away by the fact that people would give up the right to vote for a raise. So I think it's saying something about the market, about how important is money to people and bonuses, like you said. What are you seeing out there about that?
Yeah, well, first of all, that giving up the right to vote may just be a function of how disenchanted people are in their choices when they vote. But that's probably another discussion.
Another show.
Exactly. You know, what's interesting on compensation, cash compensation, is that in a relatively short period of time, the mix between base salary and call it bonus or incentive or kind of at-risk compensation has really swung towards safer with less upside, so more base salary. So that stat doesn't surprise me too much. I think there's a need for financial security, and in some markets there are crazy costs, like in Los Angeles, where I think people are feeling anxious because the cost of housing and some of those other costs are inflating at a pretty healthy rate, and so there may be a little bit more of a regional dynamic there. But in general, I would say people are looking for security, and you know, it's got to be somehow related to the recession of, you know, 07 through 09, 10, where they saw unemployment spike and a lot of people struggling. And many of the at least the millennials, Gen Z, were just starting to become aware of the workforce, and they could put it all together and understand that, well, you know, my dad or mom or neighbor was out of work for an extended period of time. So it may be related to that, but it's definitely shifted. And I've seen it in my business where we had a fairly incentive heavy focus in our compensation program. And we've switched that mix to adjust for what the recent college graduates are looking for now.
Wow, that's interesting to think about. So you've even had to make adjustments within your own company to compensate.
Yep. Yeah. So we kind of eat our own cooking, I think that's the term.
Eat what you kill.
Eat what we kill. So we actually recruit recent college graduates just like and run them through the same process that we do for our clients. And so we are typically hiring recent college grads with zero experience, maybe a little bit of experience. We've kind of seen it in the last 6 years. I've only been here for a year, but just talking to people who have been around for a while, we've seen a real shift in terms of what they're looking for in terms in compensation.
Yeah, I think that we're seeing things starting to shift within the market. I think that, like you said, unemployment is at a new record low or one of the all-time record lows. And so I think people just have their choice of whatever job that they want. And employers are, as you said, having to bend over backwards to make accommodations to make people happy and not only hire them in the first place, but also to keep the talent. So what industries do you think right now, if there's a recent college graduate or somebody who has a loved one out there who is about to graduate and thinking of what they want to do with their careers, have you seen any trends in the industries of what jobs are going to be hot in the next 5 or 10 years?
Well, you know, I think the headline that you typically see is that the demand for data analytics for, you know, STEM type graduates is going to be strong, and it's going to continue because technology is more than just the tech firms that we all think of. It's kind of invading everywhere, and data is being used in more, you know, traditionally kind of nuts and bolts type companies. So I think that goes without saying. What I would say is that doesn't mean that you need to be a STEM major to get those types of roles. You need to have the skill set that allows you to succeed there, and that could be a liberal arts degree that just happens to be, you know, analytical and be able to kind of problem solve in the way that companies are looking for. So I think there's that path, which is kind of obvious. Everyone knows that. The other path that we're finding really interesting is that there are jobs in what you call aging industries, and insurance is the one that comes to mind. We have a fairly large practice within the insurance industry. And the reason is that the insurance industry at one point was kind of a, I don't know if it was ever sexy, but it was an appealing industry. And so, you know, you had, especially for the baby boomers, you know, there was a bunch of people that came into that industry and stayed. And so now they're saying there, and the people that are running these insurance companies, all different types, are finding that, you know, within the next 5 years, I think I heard one of them say, they thought 60% of their claims processing people were going to retire.
Whoa.
And so they have a crazy need to basically build that bench to replace these folks that are retiring. And so what's interesting, I think the most interesting thing is, besides the fact that there's a huge demand out there, there's also not a, you know, great reputation, and you don't really talk to too many recent college grads that, you know, say, I definitely want to do insurance. But what you find is we've got really great career potential, because as they retire, there's all this room for growth. And then the other thing is the jobs are actually really interesting for some, for the right people. So, for instance, I mentioned claims. There are people that like to help others, and they might be psychology majors or sociology majors or, you know, English, or frankly could be chemistry, but they just really enjoy helping people. And so when we, if we have a client that's looking to hire a bunch of people in their claims department, and we have someone who during their behavioral science interviews say, you know, I really love to help people, I volunteer and do this, this and that, we say, well, geez, your aptitude is very much attuned to what a claims position would be, because they're basically solving sometimes hugely important life-changing issues that they're wrestling with on the other side of the phone. So it's some that are very much what you would expect, like the technology and the need for data analytics. But then there's also, you know, don't forget that there are huge career opportunities in some of these industries that you really hadn't thought of that fit really well with what they like to do.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. And again, there are so many avenues and verticals that recent graduates could think of getting into and might not even realize. Like, I remember for me, you know, being a recruiter, I didn't even know what a recruiter was. And, you know, when somebody brought me in to recruit me for one of their jobs and started telling me a little bit about their day-to-day, all of a sudden I started scratching my head and going, wow, that sounds interesting. And you get to interact with people. And as you just mentioned, I was a psych major myself. And I thought, oh, wow, this might be a great opportunity to put these this knowledge and education to use. And I think it's wonderful that your company is offering these tools for people out there to kind of take it to that next level of figuring out what matters to you. Because the one thing I think we all learned from what happened in 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13 is so many parents or family members may have spent 10, 20, 30 years in a job that they were miserable in, and they suffered through it only to lose their job and then go through a massive retraining. So I think if we lay the groundwork and the foundation to set ourselves up powerfully to do something we love right out of school, you're going to be able to better direct your career and navigate it rather than just reacting to people and circumstances, because it's what's in front of you.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think if they can think about not necessarily what they want to do long term, but something that they think they have an interest in, even if their first step isn't the perfect job and not that job, but if it kind of builds enough that's relevant towards where they want to go, I think the expectation is that they're going to have many jobs over their time. And each of them is kind of a puzzle piece in terms of getting to what they ultimately want to do, and not feel like they have to take the big step first, as long as they're heading in that same direction. If they want to do something that's maybe, you know, I don't know if it's an account management role, and that's what they want to deal with clients and help them with their business and develop their growth within that, you know, a step towards some kind of customer service job, even if it was a service job, just helping people in a retail environment. That is a form of an account management. It's just at a very micro level.
Yeah, that's a great point. In fact, somebody who I hired internally from my own company had no office experience, but had worked in retail, had worked in the restaurant industry. And there are so many things that you don't realize can actually have a direct correlation in the business world. Like you just said, customer service skills are something that many of us get in a variety of different roles. And then that could be leveraged into things like account management or other similar roles where you're dealing with customers. And I think part of the thing that's missing for people is that we don't even understand ourselves or the skills that we can bring to the table. And once you start to look at what you like to do for a living, I remember my mom would tease me when I would be on the phone at 13 years old for an hour at a time with my best friends. And my mom said, Jenny, you need to get a job where you can talk for a living. And so I wound up being lucky that that's what recruiters do, is we talk for a living, and I do speaking and of course the show. And I think it's funny because just start to ask people, you know, if you're a recent college graduate out there or have somebody in your life who is, have them do an inventory and have, you know, if you don't have access to Avenica or, you know, to Brian, you know, just do your own inventory and have people say, you know, what are the things you notice that I'm best at? Or even check in with yourself and do a self-evaluation and see what motivates you the most. So I think those are all important things. And so people will know as well, tell our listeners, Brian, can anybody work with your organization who's a recent grad, or what would a good recent grad or a company that would want to work with your organization look like?
Yeah, so maybe we start on the grad side. We really look to engage with candidates that are pretty close to ready to work. Our clients, when they say, hey, we really would like to bring in, you know, these three positions, they'd love to have them that week. So what we like to do is, while we start relations with college students during their time in school, we really start to look to engage with them right before graduation. And the fact of the matter is, hopefully many of them have already found something. But on the other hand, there's a whole bunch that even now, it's mid-April, I'm guessing many people in your audience know of those that are about to graduate that haven't quite figured out either what they're going to do, or they've struck out so far on their job search. So that's a perfect time for us. And then we typically go through about 3 years postgraduate, and really it's because of, in our niche, the expectations around salary and other things tend to start to inflate once you've been 4 or 5 plus years away from your graduation date. So that's kind of our sweet spot. And in terms of geography and types of industries, we're really across the board. The one thing, and I know your business has a focus on technology, we do not do much on the technology side, but almost anything else. We have financial services, we've got manufacturing, kind of logistics, the professional side of manufacturing and logistics. We have some technology, but not the coders. It's more of the customer service, account management, those types of roles. And then geographically, we cover pretty much the entire continental U.S., and we do that through 7 offices. So even if you have someone in your listening area that has connections back there, maybe back home is on the East Coast, we've got a presence there as well. And then in terms of the clients, you know, for those in the audience that are struggling with finding good recent college graduates to do entry-level roles and keeping them, if you've got retention issues, which most companies do, you know, it's worthwhile talking to us just to learn more about how we do that match and whether it might make sense for them. The cost for our services is zero to the graduate. And the way we work with our clients is we give them a period of time to kind of try out the candidate, and the candidate is also kind of trying out the company. And during that time, they'll pay essentially a fully loaded cost on an hourly basis, and so it ends up being cost neutral to our clients. It's a really attractive model, and then after a period of time, both the candidate will say, "I like this company, I like the atmosphere," and the client says the same thing, and that's the conversion, and that's the what everyone's aiming for.
Fantastic. So tell any of our listeners out there who might be graduating themselves, or perhaps have, like you said, somebody who's graduating coming up here in May or June, what would be one or two things that you would love somebody who's tuning in today to walk away from today's show with?
Well, I would say on the grad and student side, a couple of points. I would say, one, the degree does not define you. It is an important part of you, but there are so many examples that we have where people went completely different directions, and you'd say, that position in that industry with that degree, how do you get there? And it really is about defining your skills and competencies along those 12 dimensions that we use. And that really is what defines you, not your degree. And then the second thing is, we touched on a little bit, is, hey, don't discount some of the work experiences and other experiences that can help shed light on what makes the candidate who they are. So those jobs, as a Starbucks barista is great. If you worked at a bar to pay for some for living expenses when you're in college, that shows an aptitude towards service mentality. All those things define you, in addition to your volunteer and all those other items that you spend time on. A lot of people leave those off the resume, and they shouldn't. And then on the, I'd say for the companies, we talked about it, and I think the two things I would reinforce is, meet this generation of workers exactly where they are, and you may need to retool the way you think about human resources. And part of that retooling could be kind of evaluating that total package that you're offering, and thinking about rebalancing across compensation, bonus and incentive pay, work environments, other types of benefits, softer benefits that this generation is really seeking.
Well, thank you so much, Brian. And just to remind people, your website, can you give it to them one more time so people know where to find you at Avenica?
Yeah, it's avenica.com, and it's AVENICA.com.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Brian. And as a reminder to our listeners out there, if you missed any portion of today's show, it will be available immediately following the show on LA Talk Radio in the Get Yourself the Job page on the archive section. Otherwise, you can always subscribe and listen at your leisure on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. And also follow us on Facebook on the Get Yourself the Job Facebook page, where we add additional content from time to time. Tune in next week at 4 p.m. We're going to be talking about, are we biologically suited to certain jobs better than others? So thank you again for joining us today, Brian, and wishing everybody out there a wonderful rest of your week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.